You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
How did you survive your hump day? I hope you found some fun activity or maybe some delicious food to help you get through your hump day. To give you a lift as we are dead center of the work week and now heading downhill toward the weekend, phew, thankfully, I actually found a driving range a lot closer to my house than the one I was using for most of the last 5 or 6 years. In fact, that driving range has been closed for repairs most of 2020. So I've been kind of frustrated because I haven't found one or didn't know there was one even closer to my house. So I did an extensive search on the interwebs recently and found this golf course that was close to my house, and it has a small driving range. And I thought, you know what? It's a beautiful Wednesday. Temperatures are in the upper 60s. It's pleasant. There's a breeze. I've got a little time before the first baseball game starts. Let's go hit some golf balls. So it was awesome. I really thought it was the perfect way to help get over the hump. And I also ate cookies. Those two things together, I don't know if you could ask for a much better way to reset for these final two work nights of the week. So I hope that you found some fun activity or some R&R, maybe some cookies for your hump day. And now we are headed toward the weekend, which of course will be jammed with sports. No more NBA, no more NHL, but tons of college football, obviously NFL, and then we'll also have Major League Baseball, we think. So we're going to see how these ALCS and NLCS runs go and whether or not these series get extended, either game six, game seven. We certainly had some fight back and some pushback on Wednesday. We got a lot on the agenda on our plate for you on this edition of the show. Coming up next hour from Southern California. I feel like our last, yeah, Steve Weish came from LA on our last show. So no one better ever accuse me of East Coast bias. Actually, if you listen to the show, that's dumb because that's not even accurate. But for the second consecutive night, we will have a guest from Southern California. This time it's Amy Trask, who is a longtime front office executive with Al Davis and the Oakland Raiders. She was actually the first female CEO in NFL history, and she spent 16 years as the Raiders CEO. So she has really unique insight into the business of football. And obviously the business of football is affected by everything that's happening in 2020. And it's pretty much like every other business. Happens to be a little more lucrative of a business, but all of these CEOs are having to make unique decisions in an uncertain and unpredictable environment like the rest of us. And so Amy Trask from Southern California, she will join us next hour. So 60 minutes from Mark. We had some big headlines from the world of college football as Nick Saban, the head coach of Alabama, is forced to coach his practice from home on a Zoom call after he and the Alabama AD test positive for COVID-19. You'll hear from Nick Saban yourself and kind of how he's moving forward. But man, what a week for this to happen. Talk about complicated as number two Alabama is scheduled to face number three Georgia coming up in SEC play on Saturday. So that's a humongous game, obviously. And to not have your fearless leader, not have your head coach on the sidelines. Now, Steve Sarkisian has been part of the Alabama program off and on for years. And so it's certainly a voice and a leader that the players are familiar with, and a guy who's familiar with how Nick Saban runs runs his game days and runs his team. But it's got to be killing Coach Saban that this is happening in a week in which they're taking on the number three team in the country. Also, LSU and Florida has been postponed to hopefully December 12th, which is the week before the scheduled SEC championship. But Florida is having its own COVID outbreak. Thankfully, none of the athletes right now who've tested positive have anything more than mild symptoms. That seems to be the case for the most part, almost across the board unilaterally with athletes. But we'll hear from the Florida AD as he talks about what's happening and kind of the uncertainty that they're facing as well. Not new. A lot of different teams, a lot of different organizations have gone through this. But until it happens to you, I think, you know, you can only watch and hope. And then when you find yourself in the middle of it, it requires leadership. It requires patience. It certainly requires some mercy. It requires some grace. And it also requires a lot of introspection. How did this happen? How did we get here? But we found out in 2020 that no one is immune, but that at the same time, the way that we navigate the adversity, the decisions that we make as we face obstacles and hurdles, those can make a world of difference. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. I'm excited to talk to you on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And as I say, Amy Trask will join us an hour from now. We've already got a post up on our social media as our question for the night. We do not have Thursday night football, and so we have a bit of a pause here before we kick off week six in the NFL. We had so much fun last week going through top three and bottom three. So here we are, 5 weeks into the NFL season, and in seeing some teams lose their first games in week five, like the Super Bowl champions, like the Buffalo Bills, in seeing other teams pick up their first wins, the Houston Texans, that was great. We also saw the Miami Dolphins get a massive victory over the Niners. So maybe there's some jostling, top three, bottom three. So producer Dave has already put up a post on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, 5 weeks into the NFL season, and you know it can change every week. Who makes up your top three and your bottom three? Whether you use social media or whether you give us a call, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We've done a lot of phone call traffic over the last couple of nights, and I know people are excited about football. I think even with some of the various challenges in the NFL, Patriots and Titans, and obviously Bills and Steelers kind of caught up in that. And even now, keeping our eyes on the Atlanta Falcons organization. I mean, it's atypical. It's unconventional. It's anything but normal. And yet, it feels good to talk about the actual football, to talk about the X's and O's, to talk about the wins and losses, to talk about top three and bottom three. So again, on Twitter or Facebook, and then we'll get to some of your calls as we head through this edition of After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Whether you are a casual baseball fan or you are a diehard, if you enjoy watching the playoffs, if you tuned in to the NLCS on Wednesday, what you saw, and I guess if you're a Dodgers fan, this really helped you get through your hump day. What you saw was history.
Here's the 2-1. Here's a fly ball, well hit to center field. Pache's got a long way to go. He's not going to get it. It's gone! A home run! Jock Peterson! A three-run home run! The Dodgers have blasted this game open in the first. It is 5-0. What a beginning for the Dodgers, who desperately needed it. And now Rios with a fly ball to center field. Well hit, and that is gone! A home run! Peterson and Rios go back to back, and the Dodgers played a half a dozen runs in the top half of the first. Wow! Dayton on 3-2. The bases are loaded. There goes the carousel, and there's a fly ball to center field. That's well hit, and it's a grand slam home run! Max Muncy. It is 11-0. and we're not finished with the first.
Most runs in any single inning in postseason history. How about that? The Dodgers scored 4 runs in the 9th against the Braves. And you remember Brian Snitker talking about how uncomfortable he was watching the Dodgers plate those 4 runs and then put the tying run at third base and have what would have been the go-ahead run or the winning run, the walk-off run at the dish. And so here they are just taking all of that momentum and hopping on pop, so to speak. And actually, greeting rookie Kyle Wright was some kind of a rude introduction. 2/3 of an inning for Wright, 28 pitches. He gives up 5 hits and 7 runs, and the big blow is the Max Muncy grand slam. And to a man, all of the Dodgers mentioned that they really felt like that 9th inning on Tuesday was very critical for them to get off the schneid.
That was kind of our whole goal, is just carry the momentum over from last night. I felt like we put together pretty good at-bats right out of the gate. And, we got the bat to the ball pretty good, and good results happened for us.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Charlie Steiner with the calls on the Dodgers radio network. I do appreciate that the Atlanta Braves play-by-play team was having a little fun with this when mercifully it was over. Now, here's my thought. The first inning took 32 minutes, and I am thinking, in fact, I tweeted this during the first inning, because Julio Urias took a little time too. He walked the first 2 batters he faced. So after the Dodgers play 11 runs in the first inning or top of the first inning, he walks the first 2 Braves that he sees. And you know, normally he's not a starter. This is a spot start for him. And they were hoping to get most of the innings out of him. I think for Dave Roberts, it was a touch and go type of a situation. If he could manage, they wanted him to go 4. They wanted him to go 5 and kind of preserve their bullpen since there are no days off. And he grinded it out. He was able to stick there for over 100 pitches for 5 innings. And obviously the Dodgers gave him tons of run support, but I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. This game is going to last longer than the Astros and the Rays. And so I appreciated that after a long haul and 18 runs, 15 of them for the Dodgers, that the Braves play-by-play team had a little humor.
Circling the bases, Christian Pache makes it a 15-1 game. Paul, high hopper, Muncy backpedals, gloves, throws over to Clark, and that is out number 3. And mercifully, the end of this ball game.
I feel like this was a game that if you're the Braves, you just have to close the book on it. You can't dwell on it. We know the Dodgers had this in them. We know they have this potential. We saw what the Dodgers did all through the regular season, and it's not new. They've won 8 consecutive NL West Division titles. They've been to the World Series twice in the last few years. They've got a stacked roster, and the Braves were due for a stinker. Now, I didn't think it was going to be an historic stinker, but they were due to have a pitcher not be able to toe the line and keep up the standard, because they had set such an incredible standard, not only with their starting pitching, but also with that bullpen. And then, of course, they had won 7 consecutive games to start the postseason. Only 4 teams in baseball history have ever done that. So you've got history for the Braves, but you've also got history for the Dodgers. And I wondered if it was a bit of deja vu. Were you guys thinking about what happened last year? The 2019 St. Louis Cardinals, who were facing the Braves. It was a game 5, right? A game 5, and it was in Atlanta. Oh, this is back when we could have fans at games. And the Cardinals put 10 runs on the board in the first inning. And that had been done multiple other times. So it wasn't a record. But this 11-run effort by the Dodgers, the most in any inning in postseason history. And then just a quick note before we hear from Brian Snitker and Kyle Wright. This also jumped out at me. I don't think I'll forget it. At the end of the first inning, so Braves are batting. They've loaded the bases against Urias. He gives up a shot to Ozzie Albies, and the look on his face was pure terror. That ball jumped off the bat. And as the home run, I'm sorry, as the, I guess it would be the home run camera, as the outfield camera is giving you that shot, he turns around and the expression on his face, are you kidding me? And thankfully, Cody Bellinger bailed him out and caught the ball up against the wall to prevent a grand slam for the Braves. But yeah, oh my gosh, the look on his face. It was one of you. No, 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 no. Oh my goodness. So it was interesting to see how the momentum can shift so quickly. And I say it a lot. Momentum is fleeting in sports. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Kyle Wright did not last through one inning in game number 3.
Coming out of the gates, they were swinging and put the pressure on right away. And then, you know, from that point on, I was kind of in bad counts the rest of that inning. And as I got behind the counts and they continued to hit my mistakes. So, yeah, I just got to do a much better job of controlling counts and making pitches. I want to learn from it. You know, it's if I just push that away, then I'm not going to get any better. So I think for me, you got to find a way to be better for the next one. So whatever I can take from it that's going to help me be better, then I want to do so. You know, kind of comes down to you can either feel sorry for yourself or find a way to bounce back. And so I taking whatever I can from that one and learning and being better for the next outing is what I'm going to do.
I like that approach. I like that attitude. There's nothing you can do about it. The Dodgers came out swinging. They got the best of him. Close the door on it. It was a bad game. And if you're a professional athlete, actually, if you're a college athlete, any kind of an athlete, it's an important lesson to learn is that sometimes the other guys just get the best of you. Sometimes you lose. And it sucks and it's painful. But if you carry it with you as anything other than motivation, if you let that black cloud float along with you, it'll affect your next game and your next game and your next game. It's not an easy lesson to learn, but the best athletes have a mental toughness and a short-term memory that doesn't allow them to dwell on the failures. Like Kyle Wright says, you learn from the failures. You want it to be a lesson. You figure out how you can do better the next time. But this is the business. There's always another game. There's always another outing. And so you can't drag these kinds of failures with you. But this is sports. They all get paid, right? This is professional sports. Let's hope they don't all get paid in college sports. But this is pro sports. They all get paid, which means they can all have career days and historic performances at any given point in time. It's why we watch, because you never know what you're going to see, what you're going to hear. A point that I actually had forgotten about until I heard Dave Roberts following the game is that a lot of the damage done in the first inning was done when there already had been a couple of ground outs.
I just realized that we got all those runs with two outs. You know, just really good at bats. I mean, really, Alana, just good at bats. And then we hit some homers and took some walks. Just a really, obviously, a well-played inning.
16 hits, 15 runs. I did have some Braves fans finding me on Twitter telling me the game wasn't over and that the Braves did their best work in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. They did score 2 runs in the 9th, I'll give you that. But at some point, you just got to wave the white flag. Yo, you got this one. You got the best of us. Braves still have a 2-1 lead in this NLCS, but it will not be a sweep. Nor will it be a sweep in the ALCS. We'll get to the George Springer moment, the return of George Springer, playoff George, against the Rays and Tyler Glasnow. And what a big game this was for the Astros offense. Also, Zach Greinke, he never misses an opportunity to stick it to the Houston Astros. I'm not really sure why or when he's going to let that go. But yeah, he's happy, but even when he's happy, he's not so happy. Although he's happy there's no fans in the stands, he'll tell you himself.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The 1-0. And Altuve hits it well and hits it deep to left field. Going back, a Rosarena at the wall looking up. See you later. Jose Altuve goes deep for the second straight day and for the third time in this series.
Here's the 1-1. Curveball, and he spanks it to right field. Slicing away from Meadows, and it's going to play it off the wall. Meadows grabs it. Maldonado scores as Altuve bangs one off the right field wall and gives the Astros a 2-0 lead.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Robert Ford, Steve Sparks, the play-by-play voices on the Astros radio network, is actually listening to them when Jose Altuve had his home run, also his RBI double. And I felt good for him. I know it's not the offense that's been the issue, but the errors that he's made in the series so far have got away heavily on him. So I felt good that he was able to get out there and put some offense on the board early for the Houston Astros as they were facing elimination in sweep fashion, sweep, 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 at the hands of the Rays with Tyler Glasnow on the mound. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It was nothing like Dodgers Braves and the most runs in any inning in postseason history in a game that felt like it lasted 15 hours. No, this one was a little tighter, a little tenser, and the game was tied at 2 when George Springer stepped to the plate in the fifth.
2-1. And Springer drives this one pretty deep to left field. Ball is hooking. If it stays fair, it's gone, and it's gone. A home run for Springer, and the Astros are on top. Springer's first home run of the ALCS and his third this postseason.
So that was how they got the lead, but the tension and the drama did not end there. Do you feel like my tone of voice, my inflections, they're appropriate? I do have a flair for the dramatic. Plus, this was one of those games that, as you can imagine, was tense not only for viewers, but tense for the Astros in the dugout. And you got to love the moxie and the conviction of Dusty Baker. So sixth inning, the Rays load the bases. There are two outs. Zach Greinke, the starter, is still on the mound. And there is a meeting of the minds at the mound. A lot of people speculating at this point. What should Baker do? Should he pull Greinke? Should he put in his reliever who was ready to go, Ryan Pressly? Should he allow Greinke to face the next batter and to try to get out of this jam? Now, keep in mind, it's only a 4-2 game. We're not talking about 15-1 here. We're talking about a very tight game with the Astros' postseason future hanging in the balance. Ultimately, Dusty Baker, in conferring with his catcher, his pitcher, the entire infield, decides to leave Greinke out there and let him pitch.
Trying to get out of this bases loaded jam. The 3-2 to Brasso. Swing and a miss. Struck him out on a changeup. And the inning is over. Rays leave him loaded.
Once again, on the Astros radio network, a tense moment. And of course, that was all the talk following the game. Yes, George Springer home run. Great. Playoff George returns. Yes, Jose Altuve gets through a game without making any errors. That's good. But that moment in the sixth inning, which could have turned into a major criticism of Dusty Baker, turns out to be a feather in this longtime manager's cap.
We really didn't have a conversation. And the conversation was between me and Maldi. And Maldi said he can get this guy. And I was thinking about, you know, putting Pressly in the game right then. You know, it was a big situation. But Zach, I mean, this guy's been out there many, many, many times. And then I usually don't change my mind. But I hadn't had my mind really, really made up until I got out there and I saw, you know, the look in Zach's eyes. And Maldi was adamant about, you know, he can get this guy. And then I said, okay, then you got it then. This is ball game right here. And it was like more old school, you know, doing the right thing that I thought was right. And we came out ahead.
Yes. No analytics. No, here's how Zach Greinke fares in this situation against this hitter. Instead, it's a conversation with Martin Maldonado, his catcher, who tells him multiple times, Zach can get out of this. Greinke's got this. Let him do this. Let him finish this. And Dusty Baker, who is an old school guy to be sure, predates analytics and the rise of analytics in Major League Baseball. Now, keep in mind, the Astros are an organization that has not only relied on analytics, but has stolen analytics from other teams. Was it the Cardinals they stole some analytics information from, some data, if I remember that correctly? Anyway, they made a major turn toward analytics when they rebuilt their roster after, what was it, three seasons in a row in which they had triple-digit losses, and then, of course, they had those high draft picks. They've relied heavily on analytics, or they did when it was GM Jeff Luhnow and manager A.J. Hinch. And here is Dusty Baker, who comes in to kind of sweep up the mess, put the pieces of Humpty Dumpty back together again, and he's going with his gut. And I love that. Analytics, they can tell you a lot of information. They can spit back to you data, mountains of data. But what they can't do is measure the human heart or the spirit or wisdom or experience. The ability of a pitcher who's got a lot of innings under his belt, Zach Greinke, or the communication with a catcher, or that rising to the occasion, that clutch gene. And so I love this. I love that Dusty Baker went with his gut. And it's what a lot of the guys were talking about following the game, including Altuve.
That was very intensity in the mound with our catcher Maldonado, our manager, and Zach Greinke. They all three were talking. They decided to let Zach in the game. He really did what we needed him to do, and we're happy about that. Like I said, I'm thankful.
That's Jose Altuve on TBS. Can I just tell you something funny? As we're hearing Jose Altuve, I'm watching TV, and I've got a couple of TVs up in my studio, and one of them was just replaying not only the meeting at the mound, but then Greinke getting that strikeout. And you know what's funny? Maldonado pumps both fists. He goes booking to the dugout. Greinke just walks off the mound. That is him. He is a unique athlete. He's a unique personality. And I kind of feel like he had to throw water on the fire following the game. Why do you? There's always got to be one. There's one in every crowd. He said he was surprised the team left him out there.
Since I've been here, they haven't seemed to have confidence in my ability. So it was nice having that happen in an important time like that.
Seriously? Of all the things you could say, how about thank your manager for having confidence in you? Or how about thank your catcher for having the confidence to say to Dusty Baker more than once, he can do this. Instead, you're going to be a party pooper? Well, they really haven't had faith in me since I've been here. Oh my God. No one likes a person like that. Why are you ruining the party? That Greinke. I mean, I do appreciate your honesty, but 2 days in a row now, there are times when you can just zip it and not say everything you feel.
Oh, they don't really have much confidence in me, so I was kind of surprised they left me out there.
Boo freaking who? How about go celebrate the fact that you didn't just get swept out of the ALCS? Man alive. Nobody likes that guy. I mean, I'm sorry, that sounded bad. I didn't mean Greinke. I meant nobody likes that person who throws water on the parade when everybody's excited and happy and you're Eeyore. I'm rolling my eyes.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
At this point, I'm completely asymptomatic, feel fine, Our medical officials have told me as long as I remain asymptomatic, I will have a daily PCR testing per SEC protocol to confirm the initial positive.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
If we have found out anything in 2020, it is that no one is immune to anything, really, to obstacles, to hurdles, and certainly not to COVID-19. And I'm not saying that there aren't ways that you can prevent testing positive for the virus, but when it comes to being around large groups of people, there is always the possibility. And because many who have the virus are asymptomatic, you can wear your masks and you can try to limit contact. But it's difficult when you are the coach of a football team or when you are playing on a football team. And so college football and the NFL, they've got protocols, they've got procedures, and they've also got various rules and guidelines that have previously been outlined in situations like this one, in which Nick Saban tests positive for the virus. He is isolating at home, but practicing with his team on Zoom. It's also the athletic director of Alabama who has had to do the same. Now, I'm not sure he's part of practice on Zoom, but he's definitely still doing his job from home. And maybe, just maybe, what we went through in the spring and the summer, it dawned on me that this might work with the Titans too, because of all the practice, quote unquote, that we had adjusting to digital connections and digital communication and adapting our daily work lives to working remotely. Maybe it prepared us better for situations like this one. So Greg Byrne, the athletic director, and Nick Saban, longtime football coach, testing positive for the virus on Wednesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The game this weekend just happens to be against number 3 Georgia, and Coach Saban still unsure of how much he can be involved in that game on Saturday.
I'm not sure exactly how this is going to play out in terms of when the game comes, you know, whether I can have communication with people or not. So we'll have to research and sort of figure that one out. I watched practice today. I had the manager had a phone. If I wanted to play repeated, I said, repeat that play. So-and-so messed up. So, you know, I didn't leave the country. I'm just right down the street, and we have this technology, so it's really unique.
He has handed the reins as much as he ever hands off the reins. He's a bit like Bill Belichick, control freak, meticulous when it comes to the details. I mean, the man can't even take a day off from practice. Though I suppose this is exactly what Doug Peterson was doing, running practice from home after he tested positive for the virus during the NFL preseason. But Saban has handed the reins to his offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, who has head coaching experience himself, both at Washington and Southern California, though I guess there would be varying reviews on how those stops went. But without Saban there on campus at the football stadium, they're still trying to figure out what happens on game day.
But we're talking about practice.
But when it gets to a game, Sark may have to be the one who ultimately is calling plays or ultimately is in charge of final decisions. Now, here's the thing. At least in the NFL, and I believe it's the same way with the NCAA in football, you cannot have any connections to the internet or electronic media other than those devices that show you plays or show you still photos. You can't have any type of Zoom connection on a sidelines. That would give a team an unfair advantage. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that a team wants to watch the broadcast of whatever's happening, or you've got someone who's monitoring the broadcast and getting insight from the broadcast teams or being able to see replays, things like that. That gives an unfair advantage in game. And so the general rule of thumb, it's supposed to be this way for baseball too, right, is no electronic communications, no using social media, no using your phones while you're on the sidelines. You could only have voice communication between the press box and the team area. And so a coach is not supposed to be able to call in from somewhere else. And a coach certainly isn't allowed to be on Zoom, kind of propped up. Could you imagine on a selfie stick or something along those lines? Nick Saban is hanging out on the sidelines. Or there's an intern for the team who is doing nothing but holding a device where Nick Saban is on a Zoom call the entire time, getting yelled at, "Turn me around! I can't see what's happening!" No, that's not going to be the case. Again, typically, and I don't know that this year would be any different. In fact, I would think they'd be even stricter about it. You aren't allowed to have any type of communication other than press box where you might have a coordinator sitting down to the team area. You can't have a phone down there. You can't have the internet connection. All of that is access to potentially ways to cheat, ways to have an unfair advantage. So I don't believe that Coach Saban will be allowed to be part of what's happening on Saturday, but he certainly is, of course, part of the preparations, and maybe will send a 40-page memo to Coach Sark and the other coaches about how he wants things to be done.
We're still doing everything possible to get ready for the Georgia game. I'll have normal meetings tomorrow. Everything will be on Zoom. We'll continue to do this. You know, Sark's kind of filling in my absence for anything that needs coordinated in the office. But we're going to do everything we can to help our team.
Number two versus number three coming up this weekend. And it's definitely got to be a little disconcerting for the team not to have Saban there. At the same time, I've talked to so many Alabama products, so players who've come out of Alabama and have gone on to the NFL, and they talk about the rigorous program that Saban runs. You can imagine his coaches are held to the same high standards, and that Coach Sark, who's been with him for a while, and the rest of the coaching staff, they're going to be well-versed and also well-prepared in the ways that they need to manage the game. Now, you never exactly know how things are going to go, but it helps to have that continuity, helps to have a Coach Sark who has been part of Nick Saban's system. I just think it'll be interesting, maybe after the fact. Or wouldn't you like to be a fly on the wall and know the reactions of Coach Saban in his home as the game is unfolding? It's got to be torture for him, and I don't mean the virus. Thankfully, he is asymptomatic. And right now, according to team trainers, team doctors, only Greg Byrne and Nick Saban have tested positive. None of the players, which is great. You kind of wonder how it happened, where it came from. And that's a question that Florida is dealing with now because they've had to postpone the game against LSU, move it to mid-December because of an outbreak of cases among the players. Here's Florida AD Scott Strickland.
Among our scholarship players, we have 18 current positives. We have another three walk-ons who are positive, so a total of 21 current team members. And when you add in those who are quarantined through contact tracing as a result of those positives, in addition to a handful of players who are on a non-COVID injury list, it gives the Gators less than 50 scholarship players available currently. So certainly understand the importance of you know, trying to have a team prepared and available if possible during this odd season that we're all in. Certainly that was our intention, but we've reached a point where we don't think it's appropriate that we try to play the game this weekend.
Well, and right now they're not allowed. If you don't have 53 players available, you're not allowed to move forward with a game. So the stipulations from the NCAA that were set up for the season are that you have to have at least 53 available. And so Florida, unless a bunch of guys were repeatedly tested and tested negative and were able to quickly come off that COVID list, they wouldn't have enough players to meet the NCAA standard. How did this happen? That's the big question for Strickland.
Really have no obvious answers about the origin of the spread, but there's suspicion that the trip this past weekend to College Station probably was at the root of it. And again, a lot of this is anecdotal, but from talking to our sports health staff, a couple of our athletes who have tested positive since coming back from that trip subsequently reported that late last week they had what they thought were allergy type symptoms. One of them was congested, one had a headache, and they did not report those symptoms as we we have an expectation they do so, because they didn't think it was anything other than just seasonal type cold that we experienced through allergies or whatever. So there's a suspicion that maybe that is what helped make this an event that had this kind of spread.
Not intentional. It wasn't an overt omission. Just a couple of guys who thought maybe they were experiencing allergies, or who thought it was a cold. I mean, that's what happens a lot of time when the weather starts to change. And so I feel badly, because this is how quickly things can spread when there's close contact in a locker room. And maybe it was the travel, maybe it wasn't. You can only control so much. And once you introduce different variables, well, then there's less that's in your control. So Florida and LSU will not take place this weekend. At least right now, it's scheduled for the week before the SEC championship. At this point, Alabama and Georgia still a go. Number two versus number three, though, it'll be weird not to see Nick Saban there on the sidelines. Straight ahead, we're going to pivot back to the NFL from the business lens of former CEO Amy Trask with the Raiders. She's going to join us from Southern California.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.